The circle spoke, the light fell, the spell broke. Come down on me. Lightning came downward.
Hey, what's happening, guys? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let the Beat Talk. It's Monday, September 22nd. How is everybody? Good? I hope so. Hope you had a great weekend. I had a fantastic weekend. I want to say thank you right away to anybody that came out to my 5-year anniversary show at the Hollywood Improv. That shit was insane last Friday night. It was just insane. My 5 years, not till next month, but I was offered to headline the Improv, so I said, that's a perfect night to do the 5-year anniversary. The Hollywood Improv was the first place I ever went on 5 years ago on a Sunday night at some kind of weird amateur show. And I never looked back. So it was perfect to do the 5-year there. And man, I had my favorite comedians on the show with me, which is great. So it wasn't like I was headlining. I was just closing out a celebration to me of like, it was just something like, oh man, these are the guys who are my friends now that I've met through comedy, the audience and the performers. You know, it was a celebration of friends more than anything. Friends that I've made. New friends, old friends. It was just awesome. Bill Burr was on it. Insane. Bill Burr. I mean, God, the guy is just my favorite. And there he is on the show. Call him up. He said, no problem. I'm on. The guy is genius. He is golden, man. When it comes to friends, that guy is gold. Al Magical. San Fran boy from the Bay Area. Also partners with Bill Burr on all things comedy, the network I'm on. He does the show. Just kick ass. And it was cool. Even after he went on, he went, God, great audience. So shout out to the people that came to the show. Al Magical loved the audience. And then somebody that I think is just an absolute treasure you must find out about right away if you don't know anything about Rory Scovel. Do yourself a favor immediately and YouTube him or watch his Conan clips or listen to him on a podcast. He was on an episode here. See him live. Seek this guy out. I guarantee, man, he is going to be huge one day. I don't like to describe guys because then if you don't like the guy I'm describing, it doesn't happen for the dude I'm trying to get you to check out. But anyway, just check out Rory Scovel, please. Man, that was killing me. He's gangster. I love him. All the guys on the show, Christian Spicer hosted, who's been nothing but a great friend. I love him. He was hosting, and he was also been on the podcast. And then DJ Will from That Metal Show and KNAC DJ'd it. He was on the stage spinning the metal and rock, which is great, man. It made me realize there's nothing more important than when I do a show to have great music. Because if you're coming and you're a fan of the podcast and stuff, and then you're just sitting in the audience and they're just playing some shitty music, it just seems pointless to shout out stuff you love and then you're in the audience waiting for us to go on. You're going like, what is this jive? Jive is my word lately. I just use it nonstop. I brought back jive. I mean, to me, I've brought it back to me. To say I'm tired today is so fucking an understatement. It's hilarious because immediately after I finished the 5-year show, which, by the way, thank you, Hollywood Improv, for having me and the Lunacy. You guys are awesome. Thank you. But after the show, it ended at midnight. I got home like 1, slept 3.5 hours, and then I rode my motorcycle all the way up to McGuire Harley Davidson because, like, 2 months ago, I agreed to do their grand opening, and I was looking forward to it, but not on 3 hours sleep. But I didn't want to let him down, so I was like, fuck that, I'm there. So I slept like 3.5 hours, jumped on the Harley, 5:30 a.m., and burned up to 5 fucking hours. Rolled right into the parking lot, parked for a minute, drank a couple coffees, and then hosted their grand opening all day, which was awesome, man. There's a huge Harley dealer in the East Bay, up in the North Bay, you know, like Walnut Creek area. And they had Hot for Teacher play, this Van Halen cover band. It was so fucking fun. They're just there in the parking lot, just blazing Van Halen hits. And it's like 90 out, and they're wearing the gear. You know, they're just up there, and they're playing the Van Halen songs you want to hear, like Fair Warning and Mean, you know, Mean Streets, and Hear About It Later. Shit, you would never hear Van Halen play. Once again, proving, go see the cover bands instead of the bands these days, you know, because they're going to play the songs you like, and they're probably going to have more passion right there in the parking lot, laying it down in front of just bikers. It's so weird, man. I loved it. Had a great time with Ryan. It was insane. People came from the podcast. They're like, yeah, listen to your podcast, man. And I heard you were going to be here, so I came out. And that is just fucking gold, man. I can't thank you guys enough. The podcast is free. It's just like I keep saying. It's like old Metallica tape trading days. You know, you spread the word of the podcast, and it just keeps going around and around, and I get good reviews and shit, so, man, feels good. I'm tired right now. I was like, I'll blow it off. No, I can't blow it off. I never thought that anyway. I never thought I'll blow it off and do it tomorrow. That's just not how I am. But, anyway, it was great to see everybody out at McGuire Harley Davidson. And of course, they've been sponsoring this podcast almost a year now. They're just fantastic. McGuire Harley Davidson, 93 First Avenue, North Pacheco, California. Check them out online, McGuire-HD.com, or on Twitter. McGuire Harley, thank you guys for having me, and great dealership. Check them out, guys, when you're up there. McGuire Harley Davidson. What else? I know. I'm going to be doing some great shows in October. 2, 3, 4, I'll be with Jay Moore at the Irvine Improv. October 2, 3, and 4. And then October 11th, I'll be in Palm Springs. With Bill Burr, shit, I forget the name of the place, 29 Spotlight Casino. Hit my website, deandelray.com. It's on there. I feel like an idiot, but I'm sure that's probably sold out. Bill Burr, going to open for him in a casino. How dope is that? And then my good friend Eric Griffin, I'll be opening for him, Ontario Improv, October 23, 24, 25. So those are the big shows in October. We're still in September, of course, and if you live in Los Angeles or San Fran, don't sleep. Go see Rival Sons this week. I'll be at San Fran at the Fillmore. They're playing September 25th, this Thursday, Fillmore, San Fran, and, of course, Los Angeles at the Troubadour on the 26th. These shows are going to be fucking fire, so don't sleep on that. A quick recommendation. I got a record over the weekend. It's been out, I guess, since 2012, and I didn't know anything about it, and I kept hearing them at this restaurant I go to. IV. So Div, I don't even know how to fucking say them because no one said, have you checked out Div to me, which is weird because it's totally something I would love. And I kept hearing it. So it's D-I-I-V. And the record is Ocean. O-S-H-I-N. Ocean. Ocean. It's Ocean, obviously. I mean, yeah. Anyway, you got to fucking hear this record. Get it. I got it. It's great. If you're into Interpol, surf, weird atmospheric rock, a little Joy Division, you're going to dig this shit. Grab it. I got it. I've been rocking it all week. It's incredible. I'm going to get into the episode right now because I got to get the fuck out of here and go do something. And you guys are probably going, oh, good, a short intro this week. Suck it. I'm going to do a special episode on Thursday where I just described the first 5 years of me doing comedy, the shit I did, where I went on, how I did it, anything. So if you have any questions, tweet them all week at me and I'll answer them or email me at DeanDelRay@yahoo.com. Also, you want to make donations, same place. I'm still looking for a place to live, so if you know anything about that and you live in L.A., let me know. Guest today is a fantastic person, Jonah Ray. Jonah Ray runs the hottest show, I would say, in the U.S., stand-up comedy show called Meltdown. It's done in a comic book store right on Sunset Strip. Part of the Nerd Melt compound, I would say. It is an amazing show. If you ever visit LA, immediately go there. It's every Wednesday night. It has the best comedians, but not only that, it has the best vibe. Go see it. Jonah Ray, fantastic comedian. He sold the show and they shot like, I think, 6 episodes or something for Comedy Central. And it, the last episode was last Wednesday, but you can see him on ComedyCentral.com. A great show. A great person. Grew up in Hawaii. He tells stories about that. I mean, you don't meet people that grew up in Hawaii. Isn't that weird? It's like rare. This guy moved when he was 19, so he lived there 19 years in Hawaii. And he even speaks some Hawaiian. It's hilarious. Wait to hear that Pigeon Island talk. We love music. We talk music. He talks about a Hawaiian music scene. His dad was a roadie. You got to love that. Back when they called him, we're roadies. Now it's like, we're a tech. I'm a tech, man. I'm a technician. No, man. You change strings. You're a roadie. You get, you hand out passes to hot girls. Roadie. Roadie sounds gangster. Bring back the name. If I was a roadie, I wouldn't say I'm a tech. I'd go, I'm a roadie. Fuck it. We talk about how Meltdown started. Nerds versus rockers. That's a great one. Nerds versus rockers. Everyone's the same. There's no versus. Nerds, rockers, we're all the same. We talk some drugs, of course. Can't have an episode without drugs. And our bonding over architecture and films, too. So check it out. Here it is, Mr. Jonah Ray. Hey, what's happening? Here we are, another episode of Dean Del Rey's Let There Be Talk. Got a great guest today, Jonah Ray. How are you, buddy?
That was great. You just press record and get right into it.
Well, yeah, you know, I think that you lose gold if we sit here and talk, you know.
That's the gold sound.
That's the gold sound. Bing, see? Right there. But we do kind of lose it, you know? Like, yeah. You start talking, and then you go, all right, let's sit down, and you lose the initial thunder of, like, hey, you're here.
Yeah,
all
that's
right.
True. And you then know? There's assholes like me that point out the fact that you just rolled into it. Instead of just, and exactly, I know exactly what you were doing.
Yeah.
But I felt the need to point it out. Didn't need to, because I knew what you were doing, and now we're here we are, yep. Talking about what we're talking about.
Yeah, we were just talking about singers. And
yes.
I'm trying to get this, you were here while I got this call from this famous voice doctor.
Sounded like a no-nonsense guy on the other side of that line.
He was like, you know who he sounded like? Barry Katz.
Oh, really?
So at first I thought it was Barry Katz. He's all, Dean Del Rey. I'm all, yeah. He goes, Joseph Sugarman.
I was like, that's so funny. Steve Agee and I used to joke around about this character that Steve did, go like Bert Sugarman. And it was just like, it's like, Bert Sugarman's here to tell you. It was just like, but like, it's so funny that his voice is close to the actual guy who actually has a name, Sugarman.
Also, the guy's a vocal teacher and his voice sounded like it was kind of shot.
Oh, really?
And you know what he said? I go, yeah, I want you for about an hour. He goes, an hour? Yeah. I work 12 hours a day. Let me think about it. I'll call you Monday. And he just hung up. You see how quick that was?
Yeah, I was when you, I liked your response. You're like a half hour? I don't know, man. Like, yeah,
whatever. You know, that's kind of a cool outside the box guest, you know?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'd love to hear that.
I mean, I've only had a few comedians on you. You know, like my main thing is just to have people on that do things that I like,
yeah,
or respect, yours being the Nerd Melt show.
The Meltdown is the show. It just happens to be at a place that eventually got called Nerd Melt.
Right, right. Yeah. Meltdown. Yeah, the main thing, also, we bond over music.
We do. No, you're like to me, and now this episode is going to be me interviewing you as much as anything else.
That's cool.
But it's like, you know, I met you at Dane Cook's place.
Yeah.
I don't know how I ended up there because like Maren.
Yeah, right. Like, Maren, yeah. Barbecue.
Yeah.
Dane had a barbecue, Dana, and then, yeah, you were there and Maren was there.
Yeah. And like Maren just like, you know, he was hanging out with me more then because he had a girlfriend that was my age.
That's
and,
right. Yeah. The one that his whole first season's about.
Yeah, exactly. So like she was my age and my wife's age. So it's, you know, like he hung out a bit more with me then.
Yeah. You see him now at all?
Yeah, it's like every once in a while we'll text or we'll go get coffee or something like that.
Yeah, he's a hard guy to lock down. To me, he's the ultimate older brother, but we never get to hang.
Yeah, you know what's so funny? I have an older brother, but like, you know, I'm really busy and he's not as busy. And he's like, hey, we really got to make time to hang out. And I go, yeah.
Yeah, right.
And then I just start going, when you coming home, son? I don't know when.
Yeah. Cats in the cradle.
Yeah, I just like, I kind of like, it's like, yeah, well, no, well, hey, man, we'll get together. And then I know one day I'm going to be like, hey, what are you doing? He's like, hey, I'm real busy, man.
Yeah.
You told me I had to man up.
There you go. He could maybe just spin off and say he's your brother and get famous that way. Hollywood.
Yeah, it's
Donnie Wahlberg.
Yeah, the Donnie Wahlberg. Donnie Wahlberg was great in Sixth Sense.
Donnie Wahlberg's great. I actually met him a few times. I sold him a motorcycle.
Nice.
Pretty cool dude.
Yeah.
I mean, he could potentially have been a complete buffoon, and the guy's actually cool as shit.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know? What was that band he was in?
New Kids on the Block?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. That's going on a limb, calling them a band.
Yeah. What was that lip-syncing thing there? Right? Yeah, right.
But they were, you know, they were, like, I remember, like, right after the Milli Vanilli thing happened,
yeah,
New Kids on the Block, and to their credit, did a acapella show. You know, just because I think it kind of... It sent a shockwave throughout those.
Yeah, like, community. Hey, we really sing.
Yeah, hey, we really. Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of other people did that too. They're like, hey, boy.
Yeah, it's interesting to talk about that because I always say, like, you know, Milli Vanilli got fried for that.
Yeah.
Fried. And eventually it was the demise of one of the guys, you know?
Dude, yeah, it sent him into a spiral, right?
Yeah. So, and it's funny because I remember that era where after that happened, they had passed a law, and I don't know what happened to this law, and I've been asking people over and over, that on the ticket, you had to put this performance, there will be some lip syncing in
it. No way.
Yeah, like some, that was, I don't know if it was the whole U.S., but in California. And all of a sudden that just went away. And now everyone lip syncs and no one cares.
Well, if you know, you see those, like, you know, you see the footage of like how crazy some of these shows are, like Britney Spears or Lady Gaga, like they're going all over the place and there's dance moves and it's more about the spectacle than it is about
Vegas.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, then you do, but they do sing and you hear, you know, every once in a while they'll surface online.
Yeah.
The like this is and you're like, yeah, but you know what? If I'm fucking doing jumping jacks and tumbles, I'm not gonna be able to get a good note out.
I don't care about any of that. I'd rather see the singer. It's funny, when Adele hit, people are like, oh my God, she can sing. And I go, that's how it used to be always.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone sang.
And don't you hate that, like, it always, like, a lot of people always brought up her weight. Like, I thought that was always so gross. Where
that's weird.
It's like, for such a, you know, she doesn't care how she fucking cares how she dresses like a million bucks.
I thought she was pretty hot.
She's very hot.
Yeah, man. Like, I was like, man, that girl's, like my, I find myself gravitating towards what they call plus size models, which is fucking hilarious. There's this girl, Tara Lynn. She was on Vogue last year. They called her a plus size model. She's probably one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, plus, she's just normal.
Yeah, almost like, you know, with the whole fappening thing that happened, like all the leaked celebrity. There was the, you know, I saw some of the pictures of, or not pictures, but like the comments on the pictures of What's the model? The Swimsuit Illustrated model, Kate Upton.
Oh yeah, Kate. Oh yeah.
And they're like, all these guys are going like, ugh, gross. This is so fat. And it's like, what do you? Yeah. What do you fucking? You know, to get those boobs that you like so much, she needs to have a normal
it's
body.
It's so insane.
It's
man.
So insane.
Plus, like, all the guys that have no shot with
no
her.
No shot
anyway.
With her
it's
at all.
It's incredible.
I just hate that idea of a you know like. It's so odd that like our entertainers had to get so gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like I don't understand why that. I mean, I get it a little bit. Sometimes it's nice to see someone pretty doing something good.
I'm into off looking women. Like there's something off about, you know, like not off, but just totally different. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I always say I love Kelly Osbourne, you know?
Yeah.
And people are like, what? And I'm like, there's something about her, you know?
Yeah. I mean, cause the thing is, it's like, and I'm sure that's why you and I ever got girls. It's
yeah.
just cause they're like, it's like, you know, it's like, well, he's not like traditionally handsome, but like, you know, it's
yeah,
like,
yeah,
and
yeah.
And like, there's, you know, I went out with this one girl cause she looked like a cartoon version of a girl that I had a crush on.
That's hilarious.
And like, I was like, she's like exaggerated version of this old girl.
Like
I had a crush on.
Jessica Rabbit.
You know, like, but not even like sexy, just yeah, like, yeah. In like almost an anime, like she, her like eyes are big. She had a big nose and she
yeah,
was like,
yeah,
kind of
like,
short.
Like,
yeah.
I like the Family Guy mom.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Isn't that fucking weird? Like,
yeah.
I see her, I go, hey, that chick's pretty hot.
Yeah,
that cartoon. That's bizarre.
That
right?
is bizarre.
That's funny you bring that up because you do post photos of yourself, full blown nerd.
Yeah,
like you were like a fat kid, right?
I was a fat kid,
and you look like the guy that shot Lennon.
Yeah, you're not the first person to say that.
Oh man, every time I see him, I go, "That guy shot man."
Dude, and get this—the yeah. town I grew up in, yeah. they had an asylum in it, and guess who was a resident of that asylum?
James Chapman.
Yep.
That's his name, right?
Mark David Chapman.
Oh, Mark David Chapman.
Yeah, so he like actually, I grew up in the town that he fucking
that's
lives in now.
Fucking hilarious.
Yeah,
you were walking around there like he escaped.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, I also got called out the 90s or the 80s version of Lord of the Flies. I looked exactly like Piggy.
It's so funny, man, yeah. because it's funny now about how nerd is the cool now.
Yeah, which a version of it is.
Yeah, there's no like a real nerd to me is like
Eric Charles Nielsen.
I don't know, like the 70s nerds, there was a poster, Are You a Nerd? Do you remember it?
I don't know.
It was just a poster of a guy, and it was out around Revenge of the Nerds.
Okay.
It was a big poster, and it had like all the stuff the guy had, and then it said like, you know, pencil holder,
oh, yeah,
broke
yeah.
glasses,
yeah.
You know?
I don't understand how the broke glasses thing got, like, it's like, oh, I'm a nerd, I'm going to put tape on my glasses.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to wear glasses...
You're already a nerd.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I mean, back then, you
well,
know
yeah,
I mean?
Like back, it's like you know, if you didn't, because like as you know, when I found out that my uncle like, it's like he wore like contacts, and I was like, oh, it's weird, like because he wears glasses. And I was like, oh, when did you get glasses? He's like, oh, I always needed them.
Yeah,
but I wore contacts. I was like, why? And he's like, I don't want to wear glasses.
Yeah, no.
My parents were devastated.
No one wanted to wear glasses.
My parents were devastated when it turned out I needed glasses.
Yeah, it was the classic four eyes, all that stuff.
Yeah, they just like thought about like you know how they saw people get picked on and stuff like that. I didn't really think about it. I almost kind of got excited when I found out I needed glasses because you know I was like oh this is like. It's like when you're young, you're trying to find identity.
Yeah.
And like that's something that's just handed to you.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you're a guy with glasses now.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a lot of stuff. I mean, that's even why I became like straight edge because it was like, you know, I didn't want to drink or do drugs, but like, it's like if you that's like you're kind of a dorky kid if you do that, but you're like, oh, I'm straight edge. This is a choice. All of a sudden, I got this identity thing, you know,
yeah.
And that's like a lot of that youth stuff. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's like I identify it as like kind of like a nerd, but. Not really. I thought all the stuff I was into was really cool.
Yeah, well,
and it was.
You are into cool stuff. It's funny because when you saw me last night, I said, hey, you know where I live? And you said, I figured you just lived off the Sunset Strip. It's so funny because you have categorized me.
I have,
as like this sunset rocker, and I categorize you as just like nerd.
Yeah.
You know? But the really funny thing is as we follow each other on Instagram, we're into the same shit.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
The funny thing is, it's almost a judgment thing of surface. Some
Very
reason
much so.
You think I'm a sunset rocker, I know you're a nerd or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hilarious because there's so much depth to us. You know what I mean?
I also think it was because where I met you.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah.
And like the motorcycle thing, and I'm also I think I projected a lot of. a lot of my disillusionment of you know, Steve Jones and Jonesy, where I'm realizing I'm like, oh, this guy was never punk.
Yeah,
this guy was never punk.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he was the guy that they found that could play like rock and roll songs on a guitar. And then, because, like, you know, and then also like researching, I was like, oh yeah, he was just a Sunset Strip, shirtless, getting laid, doing blow, long hair, like, motorcycle guy.
Yeah.
And I think, like, it was, I met you around the same, and I love Jonesy. I think he's a very funny guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But as a kid, that was like, it's like, they did it. You know, they made punk, and punk is what, you know, influenced my entire life.
Right.
It's like, I think I started projecting that onto you.
That's hilarious.
I don't know why. I think it's just because it was all around the same time. I met you off of the Sunset Strip.
Yeah.
You're like, you're a guy that's like going up at the Comedy Store all the time.
Yep.
Sunset Strip. It's like, you know, tattoos, motorcycles, old rock and roll. Like, you know, you're like, you know, you're into, you know, Motley Crue and the and Guns N' Roses. And so I thought, I was like, oh, he must have been a guy from that era.
Right, right. Here's the thing. The stuff that I like from that era is all the dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm more attracted to danger. That's why I do like punk also, like the Clash, Fear. But really, when I was growing up, I wasn't a punk guy. I grew up in San Fran. I was more of a metal guy, Metallica.
Well, that was like, metal was like the big thing in the Bay Area.
Oh,
right?
God, yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I mean, there was still like Flipper and.
Oh, yeah, Flipper, and you had Dead Kennedys,
yeah.
and the.
Hop Ivy was starting up around. Like, no, that was not until the 80s.
Well, the Mabuhay Gardens was the punk capital, and I played there a lot. But I was more, I loved Devo. Devo is my thing, because like skating was big, and BMX and Devo was big around that. But my attraction to Hollywood has always been the radicalness of it.
Yeah.
So I love the Comedy Store for the radicalness of it.
Yeah.
It really does feel like an insane asylum.
Does it still feel the way, like, so you've known about it for, you know, most of your life. Does it still feel that way to you now?
It's more than ever I relate to it, because the thing I like about the Comedy Store more than anywhere is it doesn't run... It's the closest to an alt show as a club. It doesn't this is a club. Sit down at 8. We go from 8 to 10. And this, then we go from 10 to 12. And at that, it's sit down at 9 and enjoy the ride. You're going to see 15 people. You don't know where the fuck you're going.
Leave when you want.
It could be Louis C.K. It could be Don Barris. It could be whatever you're going to get.
Yeah.
So I always like dangerous stuff, and when I went there, I was like, "Whoa, this place is! I mean, it's black. It's painted.
It's black and red. It's you know, I really do believe that it is built on top of an entrance to hell.
Yeah.
One of the six entrances to hell, I think the Comedy Store is on. I've never done well in the original room.
Yeah,
I've done okay in the main room, and I've done good in the belly room.
Yeah.
And but that was the thing when I started trying to go there, you know, because when you're starting, you're like, well, I have to do good everywhere, and you know.
Yeah.
And but I was like, I never felt like I belonged there. I never like I really think it is, you don't choose your scene.
Yeah.
You know,
it's interesting to say, you know, you didn't feel like you belonged there, because there really is this, what's weird about comedy right now, I think, is there's this segregation that really blows me away. Like when I go, I remember the first time I went to Meltdown, there was a dude at the snack bar and he was there, and he's all, ugh, Dean Del Rey, what are you doing here?
What? Yeah. Fuck that kid.
I know, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, what am I doing here? Hey, dude, I go on everywhere. Fuck you.
Yeah, yeah.
I did an open mic in fucking the Inland Empire. And then I'll do a set at the Store, and then I'll be in the Valley. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I just need to get the craft, not the, you know, be part of the scene.
Yeah, you know, there was a weird thing, and I think that when I started, which was in 2002, you know, I wasn't, like, there's guys now saying, like, you know, there's kids starting in the past few years. It's like, oh, I want to be an alternative comedian. Like, that's like even like, you know.
That's hilarious.
It's
to me, it's like I want to be grunge rock.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just labeling yourself for a scene that could go away instantly.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be the, oh, that's an alt comic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, it's real weird, because it's like, what does it even mean?
Yeah, just want to be a comedian.
Yeah. It's like, you know, Louis C.K. could have been at one point considered an alt comic, like Dana Gould, like, who, like, they say kind of like, you know, was the one of the, it's, you know, it's, if you really think about it, like, you know, Bobcat Goldthwait, who was one of the bigger stand-ups in the 80s.
One of my favorites.
He's essentially an alternative comic. Yeah. It's like, so the term
What's funny about Bobcat is back in the day, if Bobcat was doing what he's doing back in the day, the alt guys would just chastise him now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this fucking guy and his character and shit, so phony, whatever, you know what I mean?
It's nuts how it goes. And I've always, like, you know, when I heard someone say, like, oh, yeah, I do alternative comedy, I was like, don't say that. They're like, well, you, and like when people, you know, and this is a lot of this is the way I look, you know, it's like, oh, you do alternative comedy. It's like, no, I'm doing comedy the only way I can.
That's honest comedy out. Is what it is.
It's what comes out. And for you, it's like, you know, and I've tried, you know, when you start off, you're like, you're kind of trying to figure, like, am I the storytelling guy? But when you start to do it enough, you see which parts of the type of stuff you're doing get a response.
Yeah.
And, you know, because when I started, it was all about one-liners. Like, you know, and when I started, it was, you know, like Mitch Hedberg and Zach were like the guys.
Of course.
And so it was like, you know, Dan Mintz, BJ Novak, Morgan Murphy, Jared Grody, like all these people, you know, and Jeselnik was like maybe about a year away from us then. But like, you know, everyone was just doing one-liners. And, you know, these are all people that went to college doing one-liners. I never went to college. I didn't smarter.
Either. I was stupid as fuck.
Yeah, I'm not smarter.
It was all about life's stories were going to be my gold.
And that's what I found because I was trying so hard. I was like, I love these guys. And then you also, like with one-liners, you have that protective ironic barrier where it's like this is the joke is over.
Yeah,
people laugh or they don't, and then you go, and then you don't have to have segues, you don't have to have personality.
Yeah.
And in people who develop personality around that type of material, even better. Like Jeselnik got the whole like cocky, you know, like that was a great joke, here's an even better one, you know, like stuff like that.
Absolutely.
It's like, you know, and then, you know, Mitch had the like, you know, he stoner, I don't know
so
what I'm
great.
Doing.
So great, just drug rocker.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he looked like a drug-like guy, but then he had the smartest shit ever.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're going, whoa.
Yeah, and Zach just looked like a hobo and kind of played with that. You know, everyone found a way to make it more than just one-liners. And I you know, I tried, and I was doing okay. And then one time I just told a story that just happened, because I was talking to my friend, and this thing happened where I accidentally did cocaine with a neighbor of mine.
Yeah, accidentally.
Like, we were drinking a bunch of Coronas, and he's like, oh, my God, I forgot. Do you want a lime? And I was like, sure, yeah, if I can put a lime inside a Corona.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I turn around, and he's cutting up a line of cocaine. And I was like, I had never done cocaine, and it was never in my head like I would ever do it. And he's like, all right, got you under here, go for it, man. I was like, oh, okay.
And you did it?
I did it, because that's how much I hate uncomfortable situations.
Wow. I never accidentally did cocaine. I did it on purpose.
Oh, believe me, after that, on purpose many times. But like, it's like, but it was just like, I didn't want to be like, oh no, I thought you meant, I don't want, because it was like, it would have been weird.
Absolutely.
I wanted more beer.
Lime. Hilarious. Yeah.
And so like, and that's like, you know, that was the first time I told a personal story on stage, and it like.
And then it rocks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then it rocks. I was like, oh, and then I got more personal. I started doing stuff more for my life and all this stuff. And like it was, you know, getting better and better. And then I got to a point where I was just more personal and honest than funny. Like I went through a breakup, and I just was like talking about how sad I was all the time.
Yeah.
And then I had like a fucking, yeah, that's the thing, like,
you gotta dial it back, right?
Yeah.
It's a push pull thing.
Yeah.
Like, you're going, well, this is too honest now, it's not working, I've got to have some bumps in there of funny.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Bumps.
But like, I was gonna call this podcast, first of all, yours is Jonah Radio.
Yes.
Mine was gonna be called Del Radio.
Oh no, I'm so sorry.
No.
Let
this
there
was
be
before.
Ta-
this
oh.
was this for 3 years ago.
Oh shit.
Yeah, and then so what I did was I copywrote and got websites for Del Radio, Let There Be Talk, and then the Del Radio Network. I was going to have my own network.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of was tossing them around. I was like, no, Let There Be Talk.
Let There Be Talk, I think, is such a great name.
I'm so AC/DC.
You yeah,
know?
Yeah,
Let
yeah,
Let There Be
exactly.
Rock, Let There Be Talk. But, and then I was going to call it Cocaine. The Cocaine Podcast.
I love that.
And that was going to be on Thursdays, where on Mondays I would just do the regular one, and then on Thursdays it would be all drug talk.
Oh, that's fucking great. I it's funny when you tell people, like, it's like you've done cocaine, they're like, whoa. And like, and they,
I do a huge bit about it now.
Yeah, I have a couple, like, you know, jokes about where it's, I talk about, like, Well, I love, this isn't my joke, but this is Tim Kazurinsky from SNL in the 80s. Yeah. He had the best line about cocaine, which is, it gives you diarrhea of the mouth, but constipation of the brain.
Yeah, like, that's
hilarious. You're just talking, but you're not talking about anything.
Yeah, yeah. And like, we're going to save the world. We might go to Disneyland tomorrow.
Yeah, that's the thing about cocaine. You're always so close to figuring everything out. Yes. If you could just keep talking,
yeah,
it's like, and it's just, oh, it's just right there. It's that anticipation kind of thing. And I'm also like, this is a fact. If you do cocaine enough times, you will end up in a bathroom with some guy talking about Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Lars Ulrich said from Metallica, he quit cocaine a few years ago. I think he had like a fucking minor heart attack. Didn't tell anyone.
I saw him do a mountain of. Yeah. I mean, legally, I've never seen anything.
I've never seen anything.
But cocaine was being done, and it wasn't anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But he said the thing he missed most about the cocaine is that late night bonding in a shit bathroom somewhere, man, doing bumps, you know, just like talking about like, yeah, you know, when we were in the third verse of Justice.
Like,
can you imagine?
Dude, I think this about cocaine a lot. It's like the last remnants of like the six pack, the underage six pack.
Yeah.
It's like when you get like, it's like, hey, man. It's like, I got cocaine. It's like you're like a kid in high school. Hey, man, I swiped a six-pack. And like, you know, six-pack when you're a kid, it's like a lot of beer.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, man, I got a six-pack. Let's go around to the back. We'll go in the woods and we'll, you know, it's like, and cocaine's that same kind of thing. It's like, hey, man, I got some blow. Let's go in the bathroom. It's like a secret.
Absolutely.
It's a secret thing and you get excited about it. And that's the main part, you know. Yeah. It's an adventure.
So now you kind of understand the 80s of Hollywood as there's a total cheese side.
Yeah.
But you also have to understand the radical, dangerous, and weird parties and all that shit going on.
No, I do now better. I mean, you know, on the Nerdist we had Slash on.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's really cool. And like, you know, I asked him, because you said I was going to every show I could in the 80s. And I was saying, it's like, so you would only go to, it's like were you going to like Black Flag shows or, you know, German shows? He's like, so, oh no, everyone went to every show.
They did.
He was like, it didn't. It's
there
like,
was
know, like,
no boundaries.
Yeah, he was saying it was just like hard music. Everyone just wanted hard music.
If there was boundaries, Jane's Addiction wouldn't have ever taken off.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, I saw Jane's Addiction like maybe the first year they were together, and I was like, oh, man. That, I mean, everybody was like, the hype on it was the new Zeppelin. And
no
I was
way.
A Zeppelin freak. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it was, you got to understand, Jane's Addiction at that time was so outside the box.
Was there a lot of buzz because of what was Perry's band before that? He was like,
there was no buzz because of his band before. It was a straight buzz of they had this song coming down the mountain, you know, and
which is a hardcore song.
Fuck yeah.
That's like a moshing song.
Absolutely. And they were these freak junkies that were just like, what the fuck? They were kind of Guns N' Roses, the dangerous part of GNR with the heroin and stuff.
Yeah.
But the songs were even more like out there.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So like a lot of people, like I love Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
The first record. It's so monumental about what happened. You're talking about
fastest number one record of all time, I think.
Yeah,
right?
and biggest selling debut.
Yeah, that's debut. That's it. Yeah.
So you got to think about like a lot of people, if they label you like, oh, that guy's just like some fucking Sunset Strip rocker. It's like there's three different eras.
And I watched that Sunset Strip documentary, which is great.
Awesome.
It's so good. And it, you know, did a lot of explaining. And, you know, it's all just that you know, it's like, you know, punk rock is so good and has been great to me as an ethos and as a style and as an identity and as a music and as, you know, friends, all this stuff. But it really, there's a bad side to it where you kind of like, oh, like, you know, you have this like a huge chunk of time where you don't listen to it because it's on the radio. Or you don't listen to it because they're fucking assholes. Or
that's
you,
right.
Like, you know,
yeah.
And that's
there's
the
too
bad.
Many rules.
Yeah. There's a ton of rules. And it's, you know, I missed out on, you know, like bands that I love now because it was like, you know, the bands I should have been listening to.
Yeah.
But but I didn't.
Well, I talked about it too with somebody recently. Like, I remember Purple Rain came out and I was acting like I didn't like it. You know what I mean? Because I was like, I'm rock, you know? And
Coldplay is that for me. Like,
Coldplay.
It's like, I was like, it's really catchy. You know? But I was like, fuck these guys.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's that same thing where it's just like, you know, and they're not like, it's not like they're a perfect or a great band, but
no,
it's like,
no.
I was like,
fucking great song.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
Spies Like Us, what an incredible tune.
Yeah.
You know? Don't put that on if you go coming out of a breakup or anything. Wow, that record will fuck you up.
I bet.
But my main point is that's why I was attracted to the Meltdown show. And my thing was, I don't ever care if I ever got on it. That wasn't the point of being on. Oh, I want to get on this show. I'm going to hang out. I'm more attracted to art. And I always have been. I love art. If you look around the house, you could tell.
Yeah, ton.
There's like...
that's fucking... I didn't even check that. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's Todd Shore. That's a crazy painting.
Wow, yeah. Because like at first I was like, it's like the coloring is very Ryden, Mark Ryden, but like...
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
they're all the same, camp.
Era. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Todd Shore, Mark Ryden,
yes,
Robert
yeah.
Williams.
Yeah, yeah.
All those guys are all from this world here. But my thing is... I was going to the show, and I'm really attracted to people who have success from stuff from the ground up.
Oh, yeah.
So when you go to the show, like, it's so funny. I was in San Fran recently, and they go, oh, yeah, it's like Meltdown, but it's in a video store.
Oh, the yeah.
So
that's a guy from a band that runs that. He was in the band
right.
Jawbreaker.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So what I'm saying is I love people that have success on building something that was done organically and done from like love of something in art that they want to do.
That yeah, no, it's I'm glad you said that. It's because you know when we talk about comedy, it's like it sometimes it is a conversation about art, and then people will just immediately go, "Oh, your comedy is art. You're calling yeah. it art." You're like, no, but it's
my comedy is only art.
Yeah,
if anybody ever said that to me, I'd be fuck you. Even yeah. if you don't like the style of comedy I'm doing,
yeah.
I'm fucking 48 years old,
yeah.
and I'm not working at Starbucks. I'm on stage,
yeah.
and I'm saying shit that it might throw people back or make them feel or make them laugh. Anything that changes your mind template
yeah.
is art to me.
Yeah, and I've always been a huge fan of just doing stuff just to do it.
Yeah.
Just to do it. And, you know, we... As like people who do comedy, it's, you know, it's one of those rare art forms that is thrown into this kind of, you know, corporate money making businessy structure. It's like,
yeah.
well, you got to get up here, and if you're not doing this, you got to do that. And if you're not big, it's like, and everyone starts. It's like you can't just be a comic and do what you want.
Yeah.
Everyone has this projected idea that you're supposed to be. If not everyone knows you, then nobody knows you.
That's
if you're
right.
not as successful as this guy, you're not ever going to be successful. And it's rare that like no one else does. There's no other art form where that's that happens. You know, I mean,
yeah.
like music, it's like that kind of happens, but it's like it's just like, you know, no one in music. So it's like if someone went to like a band like I don't know, I'm just saying like it's like Ice Age. So it's like this crazy like thrashy band. And if someone up to him was like, hey, you know, you guys are doing pretty good with this stuff, but did you ever think about sounding like U2? If
yeah.
you sounded like U2, but like when you're a comic, you get all this stuff of just like, hey, you know, if you did this kind of stuff, you
yeah.
could probably be pretty big. It's like, you know, like it's,
yeah.
it's ridiculous.
I blast people out. Like I have meetings. Now I'm starting to take meetings
yeah.
and stuff. And, you know, they don't know what they want.
No, no.
So they come in, they go, let's take a meeting. And then you go into the meeting and go, what are we taking the meeting for?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
just to meet you.
Yeah. And they go, well, do you got any ideas or anything? It's like, yeah, fuck yeah, I do.
Yeah.
But you're not going to know how to fucking transform because people need stuff like, here it is. It's the new friends.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
always want the new friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, to me, and this is the God honest truth, in the last, I don't know, 100 years, there's 5 shows that rock my world. All in the Family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Breaking Bad.
Yep.
Sopranos. Louis C.K.
Yeah.
That show on paper, no one would make.
Dude, it's so funny when I think about that. I was like, if someone handed me the script, I'd be like, what is this? Who
yeah.
cares? Who cares about this?
And me, every time I see it, I feel like, oh, I get this.
Yeah.
He's just making mini movies every week.
Yeah.
It's so badass.
Yeah.
I love the look of it. And then, you know, anything David Lynch does. So those are like the 5 things that make me crazy. You
yeah.
know, like if I can watch All in the Family and just go, man, this is so radical.
Yeah. yeah
you
yeah,
know,
definitely.
And so the, it's funny that people try to make money off comedy, which I understand. You want to make some money or whatever.
Yeah.
To me, I never got into comedy for money. I was like 44, and I was like, I've always wanted to do this. I'm doing it.
That's great. And I think that's the way people should go into any of this stuff. I mean, and there are people that go into it with the idea of being the biggest and the best, and that's
yeah.
fine. That's fine. You know, but the art that I was inspired by growing up did it just to do it. You know,
absolutely.
It's like, you know, like the, It's just the idea of just like, you know, punk. It's like, it always goes back to that for me. It's just like, you know, these guys were just doing it to do it. You know, Green Day didn't start with the idea of becoming a huge arena band. They were just doing it. They were just punks in Brooklyn.
Right down at Gilman Street.
Yeah, exactly.
It's $5 to get in.
Yeah.
And, you
know, $6 if it's your first time. You got to get that membership
there. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
But, you know, Gilman Street really feels a lot like Meltdown to me.
Thanks.
And what I'm talking about as far as, just things that happen, scenes, you know. I'm a fan of scenes that happen organically, and one of them being the Sunset Strip in the 80s. That was incredible because what you have is thousands of people that were into something.
Yeah.
And it was a scene, and really what
flat, it was. Just like everyone's into it.
Yeah, it's like, this is where we go, and the 80s are bad. We got a bad president.
Yeah.
We got bad shit going on. There's no money.
Yeah.
Let's just go snort coke and rock.
Yeah, and just fucking walk up and down the street. It was like.
Absolutely.
It was,
and just hang and see buddies and stuff.
Yeah.
And as ridiculous as that sounds, at the end of the day, you just really want a good time at night. Like, I just went out, had some fun.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it was the, it probably was the one of the rare times in Los Angeles where it almost seemed like a small town because it's like, you know,
it was
you
like just 2-3 blocks. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly. It was just like if it was the downtown of a small town, you know, it's like, let's just go downtown and we'll walk around.
That's
it's like,
exactly
that
what
was
it
for
was.
That scene, you know?
Yeah.
But I only ever want to do stuff for the sole purpose of doing it. And the biggest validation I got was the Meltdown becoming a TV show. I was like, oh, wow, I was doing this anyway.
Now, let's talk about how the show starts, because as I go in there, I'm like, this is fucking badass, man. I like it because it just feels like it's illegal.
Yeah, yeah, you know yeah. It's mean? Probably kind of is.
Yeah, yeah, I know, right? But it does feel like that. You just go into this back room and you go, oh, what the fuck? First of all, I bought a Devo shirt the first time I was in the front. So I was like, all right, Devo shirt. So even if the show's dumb,
I'm on top.
I wouldn't have come in here because I'm not a comic book guy. Never have been a comic book guy. I've
read
been
some,
records.
Yeah, I read some comic books. That was a weird thing. About like when you're doing the Nerdist podcast, it's like I would talk about because I got into The Walking Dead, but I started reading The Walking Dead because it was zombies and I like zombies a lot. And like someone said, it's like, oh, this guy's doing a thing where it's like a zombie movie that never ends. I was like, because you never see sequels to zombie movies that have the same character. So I was like blown away by that.
I love zombie too. Like when I was young, Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead is like my number one.
One of the most gangster films I ever saw.
Yeah.
It was the first time you saw shotguns blowing heads off.
Yeah.
You're like, do you see that? He just blew that fucker's head off.
Yeah, exactly.
And then John Bernthal is a great friend of mine. He's on Walking Dead, you know.
Yeah.
He does my podcast. He's like, yeah, you watching? And I was like, I had to start watching it because I didn't want to lie to him.
Yeah.
Man, I like that. You know what I mean?
Which was your favorite part? That's just the one with the zombie.
Which reminds me of the episode of Marin where he's Hardwick has him on.
He
crunches all the. I love that episode. So how does it start?
The actual show?
Yeah, like, in that room and the thing of it.
Well, you know, Gaston, the owner, you know, when he kind of cleared it out, there was these guys.
What was back there?
It was just a storage spot.
Gotcha.
It's just he kind of kept back issues there and stuff like that. He hadn't cleaned up like the attic area. And so that's like when he kind of got rid of everything and put it upstairs, there was just this big empty space in the back. And then, you know, he would do art shows back there. I remember going to an art show there a long time ago.
I used to go in there because I'd get tattoos at Sunset Tattoo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, and
just
I'd
go in there and walk around.
Yeah, just go in there and wait because the guy, tattoo guys are dicks. You have to be here at 4.
Yeah.
At 9, they're starting.
Yeah.
You're like, eat a dick, dude. Who you are a terrible businessman.
Yeah. You don't have like one guy?
I did. I've got 3 guys.
Okay.
But they're all the same.
They're all dicks.
Well, they're not dicks. They just work on the weirdest clock. Like, all right, we'll start at 3. You'll get there. They're just sitting down, setting up the shit.
Yeah.
Then, my wife's bringing a sandwich by. It's always a sandwich. The fuck is that with tag you guys? And then they eat the sandwich real slow, and then they talk about a concert they saw last night. And then all of a sudden it's 9, and they're starting. All right, you ready? You're like, what?
Yeah. So I guess I'm here for the rest of the night.
So I interrupted you.
Oh, no.
Go ahead.
So it's just a space back there, and people are putting on art shows, and... And then some people started doing these kind of comedy shows. And then there was this girl that was like putting on a show. And she was like, hey, do you want to, you know, host it and be the regular host? And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. You know, I helped book in like, you know, it was a once a month thing.
Right. And what was it called?
It was called Comedy Meltdown.
Oh, okay.
And
so it had a name already.
Kind of. I mean, like, it's like it was just kind of was called Comedy Meltdown. And
what year are we talking?
It was 2006 or 2007.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe 2007, I think. And so, you know, I'm hosting, and it's once a month. It's a free show. There's free Asahi beer. That was a sponsor.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, it was like, there was a dedicated crowd every month, and it was like, it was awesome. And I, you know, I was kind of thinking about not doing comedy as much anymore because I went through a breakup and I was like, oh, what am I doing with my life? Yeah.
Maybe and how many years money. In comedy are you in?
I started in 2002, so this was like 4 or 5. So,
and
you know.
So you're already thinking of getting out?
Dude, I've been quitting since the day I started.
That's hilarious.
Yeah,
I couldn't ever imagine quitting, but dude. I think it's because when I started,
yeah,
like, what
yeah,
else
yeah.
do I got?
Yeah, you yeah. know what I mean? No, for me, it's just like, I'm like, if one of these other things just get fucking, like, you know, it's like in the first show I sell, of course, it's a fucking stand-up show. The
yeah,
thing
that's
I'm
hilarious.
Trying.
Hilarious.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I'm, yeah, I have had a love-hate relationship with the whole, you know, the whole time. But, you know, we're doing the show, and then, like, the, you know, the girl who, like, kind of got it going, like, didn't want to do it anymore, and then I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to do it. And then Ed Salazar kind of took it over for a bit. And then, it was going to end, and then Gaston, the owner, was like, dude, you gotta, it's you. You're the guy. You gotta be the guy. And, wow. like, I was like, yeah, so I started monthly again, Jonah Ray's Meltdown.
Yeah.
Now, and I hosted it every week, and Ed Salazar was there for me, and then we had that guy, Zach, always at the bartender. It was great. It was, you know, monthly, same crowds coming back. And then I always wanted to make it weekly.
Yeah.
Because it's like weekly, you don't have to advertise as much. I felt like I had to reintroduce the show every month.
Yeah.
Hey, and it's back again.
Yeah, like a ghost. You yeah. It comes yeah. and goes. It's just yeah. like
no one's ever sure when it is.
And weekly, it's good for your stage persona, too. Like you're
oh,
on.
Yeah, you're just always on. Yeah, and, yeah I've become
and
a
you
better.
Can tell people every Tuesday
yeah.
when you're out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know? That's the thing. It's like, you know, when it's every week, it kind of it advertises itself.
Yeah,
it's just every Wednesday. Oh, it's every Wednesday. It's every Wednesday. Everyone knows that. And very good point. Comics that are just happen to be in town,
that's
you know,
right.
bigger comics are like, oh, what show's going on? If they know it's going on, they'll swing by, and that's kind of
that's great for the big drop-ins.
Yeah. But I didn't have the. You know, I was working at Web Soup at the time, and I was you know, I had a you know new girlfriend. I was feeling really fulfilled with just like doing comedy as a job during the day, and you know, kind of
yeah.
just.
What were you doing, writing?
Yeah, I was writing and producing and like you know directing sketches for this show on G4 and I was having a blast and I was very creatively fulfilled because I like that stuff too. I really yeah. like doing like making videos and sketches and stuff like that. It's very a lot of fun and performing in them. And I was getting like you know I'm getting all my yayas out during the day with comedy. It's like you know I'm being funny. I'm making people laugh.
Yeah.
I'm laughing with my friends during the day. And at night I was like, hey, let's go get dinner. You know, it's like it was like a
it's all legit.
Yeah, it's like for the
that's
first,
what happens to comics. They get writing jobs and then they just disappear, right?
Yeah, because you get that fulfillment of being funny.
Yeah.
Out of the way. You know, and it's. And it's like, yeah, it was the first time in years that I was like, I was, you know, because like my last relationship kind of disintegrated because I was always going out and doing comedy.
Yeah.
And this girl was the editor at Disney and, you know, not the same schedule.
Yeah, that's why I have no girl.
It's
you know
tough.
I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you have to push everything aside to get somewhere.
Yeah.
It's got to be no girl. You can't have any weird, like massive debt.
Yeah,
you know,
you can,
if
yeah.
you have debt, you're not going to ever become a successful comic. Unless you are a gangster and say, fuck this debt, just keep calling, you ain't getting it.
Yeah.
But that debt will just wear you down because then you need some useless jobs to pay the debt.
And then you just get worn down.
And then you get worn down. Yeah. And then, oh, I'm so tired. I can't. I'll go out tomorrow.
Yeah,
and then you
exactly.
don't go out.
And then you don't go. It's almost kind of like working out. Like if you start to
it's
skip
the same
days.
Same fucking thing.
Yeah. And so basically, you know, I was like, I don't have the energy to do this weekly. I don't know. I don't want to book it. You know, I don't want to blah, 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 blah. And then Emily Gordon and her husband Kumail Nanjiani had moved to town, and me and my girlfriend, my now wife.
Where they moved to town from New York?
From New York, yeah. Right. They were originally Chicago, then they moved to New York for a while, then they moved out here because Kumail got a job on a show. And so it was one of those things where, you know, it was like they were looking around. We would become friends with them. It was like, you know, going on double dates and stuff like that.
How'd you guys meet?
Just through around, like,
right,
yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, just through yeah. the scene. I was in New York and I met them, and then they came out here and we hung out once, and then you know,
right.
started. And yeah, it's like, you know, when you move to town with a couple, it's kind of hard because it's like you got to find other couples to hang out
yeah,
with.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you got to go out at the same
that's
time.
Your motif, like Marin and his girl. Like,
yeah,
we need other couples to go out
yeah,
with.
Yeah, yeah. And Dee and I are so easy going that it's, you know, a lot of people want to hang out. So. So essentially, it's like they're like, oh, we're going to take off. We're going to go check out this place, St. Nick's, to see if we can do a weekly show there. I was like, oh, that place fucking blows for shows. And people yeah. tried it for years. It never works out. And then they're like, oh, really? And I was like, you guys want to do a weekly show? And they're like, yeah. I was like, you know, I've been thinking about turning the Meltdown weekly. And they're like, oh, well, we'll check it out. So they came and checked out the next show. Luckily, it was, you know, that next Friday. It was always on Fridays because
yeah.
it turned into a party. And then they're like, yeah, this is great. We'll start like – we announced on that Friday that we're going to start doing the show over this next starting next Wednesday. Every Wednesday.
Oh, so you switched dates from then on.
Because we switched from Friday to Wednesday because of Wednesday, you know,
more
comics are in town.
That's
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
That's right. That's right.
And that was the main key thing. That was the main reason for keeping it on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, you don't like all
you
your
can't
guys
get
are
anybody
out
on Friday. They're yeah. all out on the road.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, so we just started it. And like I told that audience that had been coming for months, I was like, hey, we're starting it weekly. I'd love it if you guys kept on showing up. And they all showed up, and it was just like immediately.
Now, was it a big crowd or like 50, 20? What was
it? No, I would say it was like about 80.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what kind of guys were dropping in at the time?
It was a lot, like comics?
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean, like when I was doing it monthly?
Yeah,
or?
Like were you getting some big dudes?
Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, I started in 2002, and, you know, the scene was still kind of really small then, and, you know, I was a young guy that kind of, you know, got it noticed almost immediately. Yeah. So I made had a lot of goodwill with older guys.
Yeah.
So, fast forward, you know, 5-6 years later, I can text Marin and say, hey, can you do the show? Or
yeah.
Laura Keitling or Dana Gould or, you know, any of these kinds of,
yeah.
you know, bigger people, Posehn, Maria, just, you know, people that I've known for
years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because I've been around.
Yep.
And I'm friends with them. And like, you know, so yeah, it's like, you know, those people started doing it, and then other people, and then once Emily took over, she was more aggressive about. Because yeah, I didn't want to bug anybody.
Yeah, she became like the booker of it.
Yeah, exactly. She was the producer and booker of it, and that's
great for you because then when you're out, guys can't go like, "Hey man, how come I'm not?"
Oh, email Emily.
Yeah. It's so great. I got a buddy who books a show, and he has a secret. It's an email. It's a secret producer. It's not even him. I mean, it's really him. I mean, there's no real guy.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, you gotta email Ted.
Yeah.
And there's
did
no
get
Ted.
Back to you? Did Ted back to you? I'll call him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's nice to have that little
option. You gotta have that, right?
Yeah.
It's nothing
yeah.
worse than like you're a comedian and also all of a sudden now you're like a businessman.
Yeah.
Because you got guys, you got all these different, you know, it's so funny how people go like, they don't put me on, fuck them and stuff. And I worship this thing that Sarah Silverman said, and I always say it on the show, it gets old, but she said, stop complaining and be undeniable.
Yeah.
When that happens, everyone books you.
Yeah.
You don't talk to anyone. I get emails every day. You want to do this show? You want to do this show? And it just started happening all
yeah,
of a sudden.
It just eventually, it's like you put in the work and eventually, you know, you do one show and someone's like, oh, he's good. You know,
yeah.
It's like, and really, it's just like being in a band again. You know, you just kind of, you start to hit it and, you know, more people ask you back. And then those other person's like, oh, it's a, hey, I need someone on a show. It's like, oh, you should get this one guy. He just killed at my show. You know?
Yeah, totally.
You just got to be good. You got to put in the work.
Yeah, man.
You just got to be on stage.
It's weird when people don't want to put in the work, right?
I wish there was an easier way.
I know, right?
You know,
like people think there's a magic way when they come up and they ask you like, hey, how'd you get on this? And then you tell them how you did it and they go, oh, that's not what I wanted to hear.
I've been doing shows.
I was hoping you could tell me someone my dad could pay to get me in there.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. And the, you know, the weird thing about the like the show, the live show becoming a TV show is I was kind of scared that, you know, people would start shows with the idea of making it into a TV show, which
right.
I think kind of goes back to our point. Like, it's like, then you're not doing it just to do it.
No,
you're doing it to get something else. Like,
yeah.
you have to, you know, you have to have respect for what you're doing at that moment and not think about what it might get you.
Yeah.
You know, don't do something nice for to think that, you know, don't do something nice for somebody in thinking that they're going to do something nice for you.
Yeah, that's really weird thing too, right?
Yeah.
Like I'll do this and then you do something for me.
Yeah,
you
it's
know,
like
I
just be
that.
Yeah, I you know, I've tried so hard in my life and like I guess now career to, you know, I don't believe any kind of God or anything like that, but I do believe it's like everyone's duty to, like, I wish there was a God just so everyone would just kind of like, you know, not be a dick.
They'd it's be scared.
Like, yeah.
Right? If there really was a God, if he just showed up once, he'd be like, oh fuck, I better just be cool.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
He really is out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe how about just don't be a dick.
Yeah. Just, right.
Yeah. You
know. I love the vibe of the show. It's really, it's just great. There's a lot of really beautiful women go to the show.
Yeah, I'm always surprised by that.
I am too, man, yeah. Because anybody that's like, says like, oh yeah, like, look, man, women at comedy shows is great.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, the owner of Largo said something to me amazing. He said, the fear you should have as a comedian is to have an all dude audience.
Yeah.
That's going to be the death of you. And I always say, fuck, man, that's scary because I kind of feel like I'm the Metallica of comedians. Because I look at my Twitter following and it's 98% dudes.
Yeah.
You know? And he goes, well, right now it is, but then if you get popular, girls will jump on board, you know? But your show, there's amazing women, and the reason I bring that up is I love women that are into good stuff.
Yeah.
Because this town, a lot of women are into shitty stuff. They say, I want to get famous.
There's a lot of people into shitty stuff.
Yeah. But I'm saying like that Kim Kardashian thing of like, you know, this happens and then I'm famous. So when I meet a woman there, it's like, oh, this person's into good shit.
They just want to see good stuff as opposed to like,
it's true.
Well, what's it going to get me?
Is there bottle service? You know what I mean? Like that kind of weird stuff.
But yeah, there's a guy version of that shows up, like, you know, just like, oh, this is like the hot spot in town. Yeah, they're there because like they saw it written up in some like
that's hilarious
fucking thing. Like
right.
Say, hey, the cool underground spot. You know,
yeah, this is it, man. We're in.
Yeah. You see that sometimes, and I don't dig it. Like, you know, the thing is, the audience that's been there, they're so fucking great, and they're so nice, and
they're
incredible for years now. They've been coming, and like, you know, the original, everyone's like, oh, it's just a bunch of nerds that come.
Yeah.
I was like, no, you know, really, the original base of the audience were all neighborhood people that wanted something that they could walk to because parking sucks ass in that fucking neighborhood.
Yeah, once they park, it's like Sam Friend. Once they park, they go, hey, man, this is pre-Uber. But they'd be like, hey, we're going out. And they go, I got a great spot.
Dude, I used to, when I lived in Hollywood, I lived in El Centro. And I was like, my friends would be, hey, you want to come in? I was like, I don't. Yeah, exactly. Pre-Uber, pre-money.
Yeah, pre-money. But what a slavery. I always tell people when you move to here or Sam Friend, I don't care what you do. The first priority is parking spot.
Yes.
Because if you don't get a parking spot, and this is how dumb people are, your whole life will go down the drain. As you think, oh, what are you talking about? This is what happens. You move here, you go, okay, I'm going to get a part in a TV show in a year, and then I'm going to be famous and rich. That's not going to happen.
No.
You're going to move here. You didn't get a spot with a parking spot. Now you're parking miles away. You're getting parking tickets. Now your car is getting towed.
Yep.
You only make $300 a week at your job. You're miserable. You're not famous already. You can't find parking. No chicks will visit you because there's no parking.
Yep.
And everything becomes this lonely swirl of like, this town, they hate me, this town.
Yeah. Oh, the LA. I tried LA, man.
I tried LA. And whenever they say that, I go, well, where did you live? And the first thing, I live down in the flats, man. Yeah. Okay. And you live in like some shitty apartment.
Yeah.
You have to plot out your life of like I told you when you came here.
Yeah.
I knew, all right, I'm going there and I want to live that Hollywood Hills thing.
Yeah.
I live San Fran, the concrete. I love it. Walking and stuff. But I want to live that Hills thing.
Yeah. You want it to be quiet when you walk outside.
I want it to be quiet. I want to have a view. Yeah. I want to fucking live.
That's what's great about Los Angeles. Like you can afford like a quiet spot.
Yeah. It's you couldn't live in this in San Fran. This would be $5,900.
Yeah. This is like for a fucking family of four.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So your show, you sell the show. How does that happen? Comedy Central's coming around.
No. Actually, it was Mike Rosenstein, who's this guy that works for Ben Stiller's company, Red Hour. He has been coming to the show a bunch all the time. So with Lance Bangs, who, you know, gives us our most indie cred.
Yeah.
You know, they're just coming around. And then, like, you know, it was just a popular show. That's all it was.
Yeah.
Just a popular local show. You know, it was nice. And I liked it. And that's all it was. And that was great. And then he was like, hey, you know, we should... This should be like a TV show. And we're like, I don't know. And then it was like, well, what do we do? Maybe it's like, you know, it's like a Larry Sanders Show thing where it's the show. It's like about, you know, we have stand up and then there's actually a narrative going on. And then we just didn't think anyone would want that.
Turns out
we had no idea that that's what Adam was up to with a house party.
Yeah.
Which is a great show. But it was like one of those things I was like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
That would have been great. Because that was also like another, going back to the thing, I was like, it's like, oh, if I had a show that I could act in as well.
Show your acting chops, right?
We'll just do it like this and we'll just shoot it here. And, you know, we with Red Hour, the company, and us, and we were all very adamant. We got, you know, Lance involved in it, and it was like everyone was very clear. It's like, let's just capture the show. And, you know, so many comedy shows, they'll like they'll do it in a theater, or you know, yeah. So it's like, and like I've
they
never,
move it out of the original yeah, chemistry.
Yeah, and we wanted to show a show people what comedy shows have been like for at least like you know me for the past what's it been now 13 years or something like that.
Right.
Like you know that I didn't go to clubs like you know in LA the time you know when I was out here it's like you can maybe get up at the store you can maybe get up at the improv but you're doing
those
coffee shops and bars
Fort Knox those things you
yeah
know?
And you're just when you're in LA and in New York was the same way the downtown scene it was just like you're in bars and coffee shops and you know like loungy areas and you're just that's like where you can find you know the thing you know you're a comic when you're just you walk into any place and you kind of go yeah, you could probably put like a little stage here yeah. There's lights over here
yeah right
I guess the seats could be right here I mean that would get in the way of the door but
like
you know
101 Cafe had shows you know
yeah
like
yeah
in
yeah
the 90s
yeah exactly
you know? Now You grew up in Hawaii?
I was born and raised in Hawaii, yeah.
That's fucking crazy. The Big Island?
No. Well, the main, I'm sure. What
Oahu?
You mean, Oahu. Which,
yeah.
Which
is that not, is that not?
The Big Island is actually named Hawaii. That's the biggest one that's still actually growing because there's still active volcanoes on it.
Wow.
But that's the most rural island you can get to because it's so big and there's barely anybody on it.
What were your parents doing there? Navy or something?
No, living.
They're just Hawaii people?
Like, my dad's family is Hawaii people. Like, my dad's family is Portuguese. So, like, you know, the first wave of immigrants that came over to Hawaii, like, maybe, like, you know, late 1700s, early 1800s or something like that, were Portuguese people from the Azores, you know, the Azore Islands. So my dad's family's been there from kind of the get-go of, like, plantation workers
wow.
coming in. So
it's Portuguese and then Samoa is like how is the breakdown
it
of
started,
Hawaii?
It like you know it was the people that came for all the God stuff you yeah. know it was Captain Cook and all those guys and then it was the missionaries you know actually there was a lot of like you know Mormon missionaries that came too but then it went like Portuguese Japanese Chinese Filipino one of the last wave of immigrants was Tongans and Samoans
right
And that was always like a great way to like you know like a Samoan guy trying to tell me to get off his land where I was like well technically my family's been here before oh no punches
that's hilarious yeah. Right? yeah
there's a lot of like you know like in Portuguese like in Hawaii the Portuguese are the dumb ones because like Portuguese they you know they were from an island you know these island chains off the coast of Portugal but they were the kind of first ones there and they kind of had more of a European look
wow.
So they kind of got treated better off the bat.
Yeah.
Than other plantation workers and
yeah.
actually became, you know,
the
like,
owners of stuff.
Not the owners, but like, you know, that's the foreman or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's like, you know, if you go to Hawaii, take any Polish joke, you know,
yeah.
and just say Portuguese instead of Polak, and you, right there, you, like, you'll make someone in Hawaii crack up.
That's hilarious.
So,
now,
yeah.
What was that like living there? What age did you leave?
I left when I was I just turned 19 and I moved out here.
Oh, shit. So you were there your entire.
Yeah, my entire life. Yeah.
And I would go to Hawaii every year Thanksgiving for the Pipeline.
Pipeline Classic. Yeah.
So I'd go there. My mom would take us, and we'd go see because I was like I was way into like skateboards. And
yeah,
I didn't surf, you know, but I loved big wave riding. That's why
Dude,
I love the Mavericks. I love the Pipeline.
Did you ever go down to like what's the one up in by
the Mavericks?
That was Mavericks. That was the one where Mark Fu died, right?
Yeah, that's the biggest waves in the world.
Yeah.
But back then, before they discovered the Mavericks, you know, Pipeline was it. Every Thanksgiving, the big waves would come in and my mind was always like, yeah, I'm going to surf and live in Hawaii, man. Pipeline. That North Shore is so bizarre back then. I'm talking 70s.
Yeah.
You know, it's
no,
like.
They kind of nail it with the movie North Shore. I mean,
right? It's like, wow, man, this is crazy. So how do you get into music there and punk and stuff? Like when I was there, the bands all played covers. They'd play like three sets. I went and saw bands when I'd be there.
Yeah.
Because they had like 18 drinking back then or something.
That's right. Yeah.
You get in when you're 16. Yeah. You know?
Well, here's the thing. It's like Hawaii, there's like a rich musical history, and it's great. And it's like in the 70s, there was actually a lot of like the kind of easygoing. Crosby, Stills, and Nash was like a huge influence on Hawaiian music. And it was before like there was a renaissance in like owning Hawaiian culture.
Right.
Because it was like, you know, in the later 70s is when they started to feel it slip away. But you know, like in the early 70s, and even like it's like just recently, like this guy that I know, he just uncovered there was a whole soul scene in the late 60s in Hawaii, like soul and funk. There was a ton of bands that put out records, but like no one knows about them.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And he has like this website now where he's like trying to, you know, like yeah. you know,
Hawaiian soul.
It's called Aloha Got Soul.
Wow.
Yeah, and like it's like it's but there was even like these all these kind of easygoing like, you know, like guys like Cecilio and Capono, which is Cecilio was a guy from LA that moved to Hawaii to just kind of surf. He met this other guy, Capono, and they started doing like, and they're great. They put out three albums that are amazing. It's like real Crosby, Stills and Nash stuff.
Wow.
You know, like good harmonies, good, like kind of mellow, yeah. you know.
Well, that's what Hawaii folk. Feels like. You'd think there'd be a million of those. You
yeah.
know?
It was so huge at the time. There was Olomana, there was Country Comfort, there was all these bands or groups, you know, that were just like that. And like, you know, CNK was actually signed, I think, Capitol.
Wow.
A couple albums on Capitol, and they like my dad actually did, you know, roadied for them on the you know, tours on the West Coast and
wow.
stuff like that. Yeah.
Your dad was a roadie?
Yeah, like, you know, like it's like when he was growing up, he was into bands and, you know, rock and roll and stuff like that. And like he always says like
he was like a rocker?
Kinda, yeah. But just like, you know, he was just a guy that like, you know, liked rock music, and he's like I in the band I played bass, but essentially I played truck.
Yeah,
like he always says like that's why. He's like, I was the guy with the truck.
Yeah.
And yeah, so he liked, you know, he liked rock music, and but just like, you know, most people from my dad's era, he was born in 1955, so he's a baby boomer, so
yeah,
you know, he got wrapped up in
totally.
Yuppie culture,
yeah,
like cocaine, like he started doing cocaine,
yeah,
like when I was growing up, and like, you know, just a real, just kind of like, you know,
Hawaii had a lot of drugs when I was
oh, yeah,
there all
yeah.
the time.
Batu,
they,
yeah.
they had that ice going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah, ice, Batu, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's still a problem.
Well, it's so funny because like, I live in San Fran, it was just, you know, crank. It just
yeah,
snorted
yeah.
crank, speed, whatever.
Yeah.
But when I remember the first time I went to Hawaii, man, it was like zombies. And I was like, what's yeah. up with those guys? And they're like, oh, man, ice. And I guess they were smoking speed, and it was called ice.
Yep.
And it never really caught on. I mean, it wasn't called ice here in the States.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, which is weird.
No, it's nuts. And it's probably, I mean, that's why that show Dog the Bounty Hunter exists. It's, you know,
yeah.
It's because there's all these guys fucking ganked out. Tweakers, and they just fucking fight, and they beat their, you know, beat their wives and stuff like that. There's
that's crazy.
Yeah, it's a yeah, it's gnarly. And like you know, I knew a lot of guys. I went to school, high school, with some guys that just kind of like tweaked themselves out of school and just kind of.
Yeah.
I ran it like last time I was there a couple years ago. I just saw this guy and just like just glassy eyed, just like oh yeah, hey man,
hey, I remember you,
right? You we went to school together. Yeah. Like it's like, you know, just like.
Yeah,
I was like, man, what? You're just missing teeth, just like,
yeah, just ice,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, bro, fucking still chucking, chilling, right? Like, just like the guy is like still like stoked
hilarious.
On just being a guy.
What is that island talk?
It's a pigeon. Well, it's like, you know, we call it pigeon.
It's called pigeon.
Yeah, but pigeon is actually kind of just a colloquial term. It's like, you know, you could say that Creole is it's pigeon.
Creole.
That's a pigeon
yeah,
language.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
yeah,
Creole is incredible.
Yeah.
Man, the first time
Creoleable.
I went to the Voodoo Fest like. I don't know, 96 or something, see Nine Inch Nails. And
nice.
And I remember I took a tour of the Creole, like, swamp area, and those guys started talking, these white guys.
Yeah.
And you're going like, what the fuck?
Yeah, some words are French. Some
it's
words
the most
are, yeah.
radical language I've ever
it's,
heard
it's
in the United
truest,
States.
It's the truest, like, weird mix of languages.
There's a great movie, Cocksucker Blues.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, The Stones. And there's a scene where Keith's sick, he's dope sick, and he needs a heroin. And that dealer shows up, and he's a redheaded white guy. And he's like, get him in there, motherfucker! You pay yes, me, motherfucker,
yeah,
you cucker!
Yeah.
And they're like, what is this guy? They're in New Orleans.
Yeah.
So pigeon of the island talk over there.
Yeah, it's like, you know, there's like some Hawaiian terms, Portuguese, Japanese.
Can
like,
you do it?
Yeah, so it's like, I'll just, like, it's like, brother, can you small, what, like, let that, like, you want, like, can you speak pigeon, eh? But it's hot today, yeah? Brother, whoo, buddy. You know, it's like, it's all just like, like,
what's
brother,
the,
like what? Like, hey, I like go stay in your house. It's like, hey, let's go to your place.
Yeah.
Brother, like go stay in your house. What? Like beef. What? Like beef. Brother, give me stink eye. Brother, kind. What?
Whoa.
Are you on Mahu, eh, brother? Fuck you, brother.
Like, yeah. That is awesome,
yeah.
dude.
Yeah,
man, that is crazy.
Yeah.
Did you speak like that?
No, I had like, you know, I had a tinge. It's just regional, you know.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
When I came out here, everyone said, I would be like, from where? Oh, yeah, I wasn't sure because you. I was like, what do you mean? I speak like everybody else. And
yeah.
they're like, well, you end like you end questions with yeah,
yeah.
Or like you end statements with yeah. So it's just like, you know, in Hawaii, you know, like French is like, it's very hot today. No. And like,
yeah.
It's like Hawaii. So it's like, oh, hot today. Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, brother, big waves, yeah?
Man. What's that thing they call the tourists or whatever?
Well, white people, Howley.
Howley, yeah.
Brother, you dumb, Howley, yeah? You went Lolo. You dumb, man. Kind is one dumb Howley. Come up to me, brother. He's dumb as one Portuguese.
Dude, that's why I love podcasting, man, because you just get, like, I mean, that's why I like Meltdown, really, because you, or different scenes, I've always traveled in so many different scenes, and you take away so much stuff. I've traveled around the world, and I but I really feel like that, you can get so much different stuff in this city of L.A.
Oh, know? Yeah.
It's great, right?
No, I love Los Angeles so fucking much.
Me too.
I fucking love it. It's just, and you know what's weird? I've lived here now for 13 years.
I'm 13 too.
Yeah,
I moved here in 2002. I mean 2002, one or what?
Wait, it's 14. So I've been here for, oh shit, no, I've been here for 13 years.
Yeah.
Because I got here August, late August 2001.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's so great, right?
Yeah, like, I've lived here for so long. I still find, like, I've never been up over here.
Yeah.
On the way to your house.
Man, where do you live?
I live in Atwater Village.
Oh, yeah.
But I've
lived
in San Pedro, Santa Monica, Hollywood, Silver Lake, Los Feliz, downtown, Highland Park. You know, I've lived all over the place in Los Angeles. And still, yet, you know, because of that app Waze that gives you shortcuts, I've, like, put that thing on and, like, I go, like, hey, I didn't know this place was over here. Like, you know, it's just like it takes you through a route and you're like, that's right, I always take this street. Yeah. And now that I didn't know there was all these stores and all this thing.
Isn't that,
like,
crazy?
It still happens.
Like when
all
I did
Maron's
podcast, I was like, oh, look at this, York. I could live here.
Dude, York, I want to fucking live over there so bad. Especially everything on, like, Figueroa now.
I know, right? What a great fucking hood, man.
Yeah, it's great.
And, you know, they got the old Craftsman's. I'm way into architecture.
Have you ever done the tour of the
Pasadena?
The Gamble House.
Oh yeah, man.
Oh,
come on, man.
I love that. Huntington Gardens was doing, like, a Green and Green retrospective of the, like, all their furniture, and then, like, someone's like, yeah, if you really want to see some, like, really good Craftsman stuff, you go to the Gamble House. And, like, so me and my girlfriend at the time
did the tour.
And for the nerds, it was also the house of Doc Brown and Back to the Future.
Yeah, the nerds. I love architecture more than anything in this planet. Like,
nice.
The only reason I really would want to make some money is to buy, like, you know, like, some pad. I don't even know which style I would get, though. Like, I love Craftsman's, but then
you're
like,
stuck with the furniture. Like,
yeah,
it's like,
I know. But then I love the case study houses.
Yeah.
But then I love fucking like Frank Lloyd Wright, like.
Mid-century modern stuff.
And it's like I'm all over the board. Then I, like, in this neighborhood, old Spanish, 30 Spanish.
Yeah, I know. It sucks. Like, it's there's no way, because it was funny because I was talking to Hardwick and he was, like, looking for, it was before he bought his house, which isn't too far away from here. But I was just like, I was like, you should get a Craftsman. He's like, nah, like, because he likes mid-century modern furniture. He's all, I get a Craftsman, I have to get Craftsman style furniture. You got to get dark woods, you got to get your leather. And he's like, I don't like that kind of furniture. So I, you know, it would clash and it would look weird. And I was like, oh, you're right. It's, you know,
I got a new dream now.
Yeah, what is it?
My new dream is, and this is fucking really weird, is I just want to make money to where I can buy a piece of land up here by the Hollywood sign that, like, something nobody can use, and buy an Airstream.
Oh, the Airstream is another one of those things where I'm just like, when I have the money, I get the Airstream.
Full Airstream, like Sean Penn style when his pad burned down, you know? Airstream. But then next to it, I build a garage for my motorcycle. So I do have a garage, you know? Yeah. So it's an Airstream in the garage.
Yeah.
But man, I could get into that because this is all the size I need, really. I like smaller. Like, I love Dwell magazine.
I love Dwell magazine.
And I fucking love Dwell is my playboy.
Yeah.
You know? I've always felt like a weirdo in the 90s. Like, whenever Dwell first came out, I'd be at the magazine. I love magazines, first of all.
I love going to the, what's the one next to the Urban Outfitters?
I fucking love it there.
Yeah, Ibar or whatever.
Yeah, man. I love, so great.
Those books.
So I'll go in and I'll just pick up, Dwell and be looking through, like, look at this guy's pad. But recently they had these, like, 10 kids from Frank Lloyd Wright School in Scottsdale.
Oh, wow.
They gave them the smallest pieces of land in Scottsdale and said, build your place. These guys built, they're only like 300 square feet, you know, but I'm like, that's it.
That's it.
That's
perfect.
All I need.
I still need to watch that documentary, Living Small. Have you watched it yet?
Oh, man. So great,
yeah, I need
man.
To watch that.
To me, like, I'm selling everything in here. Like, this is kind of like an eBay house, but I haven't watched the TV in 5-10 years. You can see how old that is.
Yeah.
But it's just all about art, and then that's going to be all records over there.
Nice.
And then a turntable. That's it. That's going to be in here because, you know, I read, you know, cluttered house, cluttered mind.
Yeah. No, I try to. It's, you know, it's that.
I see pictures
struggle.
Of your place. It looks like it's modern. You got modern furniture and stuff.
He's starting to. I had a lot of like because I was like into craftsman stuff, and I had a lot of dark wood furniture. And now I'm starting to kind of like, you know, we got this kind of cool looking 60s couch. And then I got the Eames replica.
And
we're starting to kind of lean that way. There's a really cool place off of Figueroa in Highland Park called Sunbeam Vintage.
Oh wow!
Like you should check it out. It's a place that
I got that on New York. That desk,
dude. I love those old desks.
That's gonna be my podcast desk. That's why it's kind of a mess now. But I'm gonna mount mics one corner to the other corner.
And then I
write on that and just look out the window and
stuff.
Yeah,
that's nice.
But yeah. There's great shit over there, right? On Figueroa, those stores and New York.
Yeah, there's a ton over there. There's like, you know, there's a pretty good places on Sunset, like East Sunset, like Pepe's and Sunset Bazaar, and they're right next to each other, and they always kind of got some good stuff, too. And you know.
So now let's, before I get rid of you, let's talk the turntables, because you walked in, and you and I love records.
I love records. Here's the thing. I was, you know, when you get into punk, you get into 7-inches.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a lot of bands that you
That's
listen
what
to.
They, yeah.
It's the cheapest thing you can put out.
And they trade it and, you know, hand it off 7-inches.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
and
like
now they're worth fortunes.
Yeah, I know. I wish I would have kept on. So right. I kind of like, you know, I also got rid of a lot of stuff over the years.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I turned 30 and...
Woo!
Yeah.
Fuck. Ooh.
No, I'm not
Life
doing...
changer.
Not doing... I'm not doing the Pete Holmes from that live Opie and...
Yeah,
did you hear that?
Yeah.
I'm 30. And, oh! No, but it's like, this is what happened. Like, basically, I turned 30 and like I noticed I'm married. And I noticed that I'm pretty good money wise for now. You know, I'm not rolling, but like it's like I'm not like
you
constantly.
Got Comedy Central money. You don't got CBS money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I got like,
you can pay rent.
Yeah, here's money that'll last you the year.
Yeah,
that's pretty much what it is. It's like, you know, you get your allowance all up front, and it's up to you to like make it last.
Yeah.
And so I kind of like, you know, I was like, oh, and then there was this, you know, a little bit of time where I had a job coming up, and I was like, you know, I'm just gonna like. Not I have the job coming up, and I'm not going to stress out every day like I got to write or I got to do this and I got, you know, I was like, I'm just going to. And then I found myself in a fucking record store, and I was like, this is nice. You know, and I think I kind of got sick of them because I worked at them for so long, and I was just kind of like, I don't want to be.
Oh, you worked at a record store?
I worked at like a record store in Venice Beach. I worked at Amoeba for a bit. I worked at record stores in Hawaii.
Wow, you worked at Amoeba?
Yeah. I got fired for giving out discounts to my friends.
Did you know my guy Eric Mead?
That name sounds familiar.
He's kind of a wiry little dude, like, hey, man, oh, yeah.
That's okay. It could be like a few guys there.
Yeah, right.
And also, it wasn't really like working at a record store because it's like there was fucking 200 employees, and I was just at a counter. It's like I might as well work at that fucking Target.
It's so weird because to me, Amoeba is Berkeley. I grew up in San Fran. Yeah. So it was just the one in Berkeley I'd go to.
Yeah.
And I'd pick up some metal records.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they opened the one at the Bowling Alley in San Francisco. Which kind of really made me hate Amoeba at the time because I loved Park Bowl, which was the bowling alley on Haight Street.
Yep.
But it wasn't their fault. What are you going to do? The guy was done. Yeah, I used to bowl there on Thursdays. They had Rock and Bowl, and actual bands would play.
Oh,
all the
that's
lanes,
great.
Like Four Non Blondes for Thursday. You know, what's going on? You're rolling and shit, you know, and you're drinking and you're just, you know.
That's awesome. That's why I like Eagle Rock or All Star Lanes in Eagle Rock.
That place, I just saw it. It's so cool.
Yeah, I fucking go there. I've had like numerous birthdays there.
I love bowling.
I love bowling. It's like, and they got a good bar.
Yeah.
And for some reason, a Chinese restaurant. But also, like just last night, they had a hardcore show there, and it was fucking
great.
That's
fucking cool. So how do you get into records?
So I used to have this. I used to have that. And that's it. You just kind of started. I all I had really was a Crosley. And I didn't even have a real turntable. And then like, you know, I would take pictures of like the records I was listening to. And then Ronnie from the Muffs, he was the bass player in the Muffs. And I used to work with him at Benway Records in Venice Beach. And he was like, every time he would comment, he's just like, Crosley's destroy records. You're going to fucking, you know, like, it's like, and it's true. Yeah. Like, you know, it's a plastic, but whatever. It's not for.
Yeah, whatever.
But I was still casual. I was like, well, I'm not collecting. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm just listening. Yeah. And then I just kind of started getting more and more and more. And then like, I was like, you know, and then it's like it just obsessed now.
Yeah,
and it's and it also it's like, you know, sadly enough, it's just another addiction, but it keeps me from more unhealthy addictions.
That's
you
correct.
Know? It's like
yeah.
it's like, you know,
you don't party at all now.
No, I party and I drink. Oh, you know, I yeah. get drunk all the time.
Yeah,
and I love it, but it's just like, you know, I can, you know. I also got like addicted, not in like never jerked off. I've never been like jerked off.
Yeah.
But like it's like I got addicted to just going to get like massages.
Oh yeah.
It was really like, you know, just like
no rub and tugs.
No rub and tugs.
Really?
Yeah.
That was. Did you ever go to the rub and tugs and then they try to tug you?
Yeah. That was like because it was one I was like this is around the corner from my house and I was like oh no and I felt bad.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, it's like I had to
pay. That almost sounds like a nerd lie. Like I only go for the massages.
No, but that's the actually sadder part about it. You know.
I know.
Yeah. And, like it's you know I went like I was just like because it was just like it was like it was just a time to like shut the brain off. It's an hour where you don't really do anything.
Yeah.
And then like you feel like you worked out afterwards because your muscles are all, you know.
Well, my dream is Airstream and then massage every day, 1 hour, killer, because man, I don't think you feel like the way I feel after a great massage every day.
Yeah.
Man, I'll take the world on. You know,
yeah.
There's this chick over on Ventura Boulevard. She was Shaq's masseuse.
Yeah.
And she's like 2 feet tall. And she climbs up on you and just like she has these poles on the roof and like, like gets into you. And you come out of there and you're like, it's euphoric. You know, they say you got all the stress in your neck and
just releases
your
shoulders. A bunch of shit.
Yeah. And it gets rid of all the bad junk in your mind.
Sometimes like it's like after like a crazy hard like Thai massage where they're just like walking all over you.
I
get a headache because it's like it just released all these toxins from my muscles.
I love the Thai massage more than anything, man. Yeah. And I like, and also hand massage and foot massage. I ride motorcycles.
Oh, I bet.
So when
you
get your hands done, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, I can move it. I can just.
So you got addicted to massages?
Kinda. Like I was just going more than I should have, you know. And then I was embarrassed by it, so I didn't tell anybody, and it was just where were you?
That story.
It's so dumb.
And no tug is the funniest.
I know. Like, that's the saddest part.
Because no one's gonna believe you if they caught you when you come out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost dirty when you come out of a massage place too, right?
They're like, you don't make eye contact.
Yeah, you're like, hey.
No. Yeah, but it's like, but I get it. You know, there's nothing I'd like more. Sometimes I'll go home and jerk off because, you know, I'm like, hey, there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I think I saw a documentary once about like the human trafficking that happens. And I'm just like, I was like, I don't want to be responsible for, you know, these things. It's like she comes in and she like gives you a massage and a hand job. Then she goes back into the box. You know, I don't know what
happens. I saw Neil Brennan did a great joke last night where he said, you know, at the end of the day, people judge these. And he was, of course, just joking.
Yeah.
But he said they judge these Asian massage parlors. But you're wearing Nikes.
Yeah.
It's like, who's better off, the sweatshop making Nikes or the girl working in the massage parlor in sunny Los Angeles?
It's a fucking great point.
Oh man,
great point.
I love him, man.
So like, you know, like in or you know, eating something I shouldn't, like going in, like it's like I'm just gonna go to the Rustic and drink and have a burger, you know, or just you know, it was like, so going to record stores was keeping me from doing some more destructive health-wise stuff,
right?
Yeah, you know, destructive towards my bank account for sure, but not towards.
Totally. You get, and then, so have you upgraded your turntable?
Yeah, then I got like an Audio Technica.
Right.
Technics. And now, like, now I'm even like, I was like, you know, I really sometimes wish I could just kind of go from one record to the next record. So now I'm thinking about even getting a second turntable.
Oh, yeah.
And a mixer, just so it's like, you know, because there's that, when you're, you know, I'm sure when you have some people over, you're like, there's always that awkward, like, oh, hold on. And then it's just quiet as you're getting another record ready or turning it over.
Yeah.
And like, I'm just like, it's like, I just want to, and just, it's a fun activity to kind of do that. It's just to kind of have the, get the other record going and then just, not DJ.
Like
seamless music.
I gotcha. How about getting one of those, I saw this recently, it was badass. It looks like that, that case there, the lower part.
Yeah.
It was one of those players from the 60s where you open it up. And the speakers were in the left.
Oh, already in the console.
These big ass consoles.
Yeah.
But then it plays like 5 records. You know
those? Yeah.
That thing. You
those
know?
Things must destroy records.
Yeah,
though,
right.
Because they're stacked up.
I know. It's so fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Now, as you looked at my system, you're like, oh, you're all in. The way I looked at it is I did some mad studying. Of course, I want like Macintosh, you know, like 60s Macintosh, and their turntable's $7,000. Yeah. I'm not getting that. And the records are $20. How are you going to play it? There's turntables that are $200,000. You're like, get the fuck out of here.
Who gives a shit? And the thing is, and like those are the ones with like the, you see the band outside. You're like, and they go, and just to be careful because the band slips off all the time. Then why am I fucking paying more money for it?
Yeah, not only that, but this record was $6.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. Also, do you have, real quick, do you have a limit of what you pay for a record? Mine's 40. I don't go over 40.
Well, it just depends. Like, I really want to get, like, the original Mad Season.
Yeah.
And it's always 100. I have the reissue. It's fine.
It's just the same thing.
I know, but I love that cover on the other one. So, yeah, you know, I don't know. Like, I would pay 100 for each Zeppelin if they were unopened.
Yeah.
But if shit's unopened, it's what it is, you know?
Yeah, I just broke my... Because I found Nevermind, British Pressing, first British Pressing.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, $80.
Right.
Which is worth it.
Yeah, hell yeah.
But I didn't get it because I was like, no. But then, like, I was like at the record store I was going to, Jackknife Records in Atwater.
Yeah.
And the guy is like,
are they good?
Yeah, they're pretty good. Like, you know, it's a small shop and the guy's great. It's like, it's a cool shop to, you know, just check in. And he's like real obsessed with tapes now too, like everybody.
Cassette tapes?
Yeah, everyone's into
cassette tapes. I just sold tons of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Tons. I had all the
He gives good prices.
Aubrey, I have a few more left.
Yeah, take them over there because like he's really, his tape section is good. Because a lot of kids.
I had crazy shit like Merciful Fate. Old metal, like Saxon.
Yeah, all those kids.
This shit was like, and they're all my stuff. My stuff in my life has to be mint. So the records have to be mint. When I first started, I just bought a bunch of records in Palm Springs. I was at this garage over there. There they are. There's the left of them.
Oh, just the shitty dollar bin.
I'm buying records. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a bit more, you know, it's funny. When I went to Denver, Ben Roy, who's an awesome comic, and next time he's in town, you got to have, because he's in a great punk band and he's an amazing comic.
I'll have mine.
Yeah, he's covered in tattoos, sober guy, used to just be, and like his band right now, they're fucking great. They're called The Spells. They're great. But anyway, it's like he took me to the record store, and it was just like I started seeing all this old like thrash and like power violence and hardcore stuff that I used to listen to like in the 90s. And I was like, oh, and I kept on like I bought them all.
Yeah.
And then I brought them home. I was like, I'm never going to put these on.
Yeah.
I'm never going to be in the mood to listen to fucking, you know, it's like in the car maybe or working out maybe. Yeah, but like, I'm not going to go like, you know, let's just hang out tonight and listen to some Locust, you know, and it's just.
I put on like Exodus Bonded by Blood, which I have, which is the probably I call it the most iconic thrash record of all time to come out of the Bay Area.
Yeah,
I have it now, and I put it on, and it blows my mind to hear because it's so fat.
Yeah,
you know? It's like
that was like the start of like metal starting to get fatter.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. But so you got turntable.
Yeah,
and then what do you have for an amp?
It goes through my little, you know, the thing, the receiver for my TV and all my video games. It's like I just put it in there and I put
what
it on the
speakers.
Like just the fucking bar for the TV.
No.
I know.
Oh.
That's the thing. It's
all like, right. You see my setup?
Yeah, it's great, but like I don't have room for that. Like I already have the records are taking up so much space. And my wife is she's cool.
Yeah, but
cool,
you got to get a great. Listen. So I did some research. In the 70s, when I was a kid, my best friend's family had that Marantz there.
Oh, really?
I never forgot it. Marantz is below of Macintosh, but if you really read up on it, it was built bulletproof.
Yeah.
And some say it's the best sounding amps going, you know, for the money.
For the money.
We're talking $500 to $1,000 for your amp. That turntable is a dual CS5000. It's from the 70s. I read up on that. That's wood. That's an aluminum platter.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that.
All made in Germany.
Yeah.
That thing right there, cool thing about it, I like, is it has self-stop. So a lot of times I forget because iTunes.
Yeah.
And then I'm outside and the record just...
Yeah.
Like, oh, shit.
That sometimes I'll just be in the room, too, reading.
Hell yeah, you just forget. And so that clicks off. I got that. You can get that from anywhere from $300 to $900. Mine was mint. eBay scored at $450. Buy it now.
That's fucking great.
The speakers are Advents from the 70s. $300. They sound unbelievable.
They look incredible.
Yeah. They're
stylish, too.
Yeah, they are. So the whole system is about $1,500.
It's great.
And it'll last me the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I don't see going above that. because it sounds so fucking good. And after that, my hearing from playing rock
exactly.
is gone.
Yeah, I don't need, you know, I'm not an audiophile.
Me either.
It's like, for me, it's like, oh, do you think records sound better? I was like, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Sure. They do sound better.
They sure, yeah. But that's, to me, but like, I, that's not enough for me. Like, I like the process.
I like the process, and I takes the ADD out of listening. I always tell people, I put the record on, I've selected Clash, yes. Enough Rope.
Yep.
I'm
you're listening
I'm
to albums again.
I'm invested into this side one.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, exactly.
Which I love, because then this texting, dick pic, fucking Instagram, swipe left world.
Yeah.
People, their brains are remapped of,
yeah,
and me doing coke and meth back in the day, mm-hmm. my brain was like that, like next, and now I want to just sit back and enjoy life, you know?
Yeah, definitely, and I really do, you know, I read more when I'm listening to records, I get stuff done around the house more. It's like, you know, also, it's funny, the first time we had Tom Hanks on the Nerdist podcast. Yeah. It's like, you know, we did it in his office and he had a ton of records. And like, I was just right when I started, but I was like, yeah, I've been buying records. He was like, oh, really? Yeah, you know, because he likes old rock and roll and stuff like that.
Which, by the way, he did a great rock movie. That Thing You Do.
That Thing You Do is one of the best movies about bands of all time.
Fantastic. Here's the two movies of music. Spinal Tap for the comedy.
Yep.
Thing You Do for the 50s, and Almost Famous to me is a masterpiece, because if you
that's play, a great triple feature.
Yeah, if you play music like you or I, Almost Famous is so fucking real.
Yeah,
I kept going like, come on, they're gonna do something bogus. Never did.
Yeah,
never did. You never know why? Because they had real guys on there, like Peter Frampton.
Yeah, yeah, being like,
and Ann Wilson from Heart, yep. that were advising it. And then you have the King of Rolling Stone.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, exactly. I like because it's like, you know, They play it all natural and like underplay most stuff. And there's rarely like a winky, you know, like I think the most winky moment.
It'd be like Golden Guy, like
in A Six Pack and the Girl to the guy in Humble Pie. Like there was like a couple of those parts. And some of the stuff, like the uncut version. Here's the thing. The director's cut of both That Thing You Do and Almost Famous are so much better, and they're way longer, but seem shorter.
Way better.
Like the
that weird scene with Jack Black, what's his name? Jack Black's partner when he's the DJ.
Oh, Kyle Gass. Yeah.
That shit is crazy in there. You know?
It's like, that stuff is great. And like, it's just both movies, there's a lot more comedy, but there's also like the thing about That Thing You Do is that, you know, you don't even realize the weird plot holes when you just watch the movie.
Yeah.
It's only until you see the director's cut where you're like, you're like, oh, yeah, what did happen to that? They just kind of, you know, it's like, oh, they're broken up now. It's like, it's just a real, but then you see, you know, like Charlize Theron's character, you see more of her like lying to Skitch to go hang out with the dentist. Like, so you know that's about to happen.
So great, right?
And there's ton more scenes between, you know, Skitch and Liv Tyler.
Liv Tyler.
It's like, you know, like there's more moments of them being cute with each other throughout the movie. So when he decides to be in love with her,
then you understand it.
You totally get it.
Yeah.
And then also just like the, like a lot of band stuff. It's like when they go to that Pittsburgh show, you know, Pittsburgh and the Pittsburgh, you know,
yeah.
It's like, then they, there's a scene where they all go out into the stage before the audience gets there and they're like, whoa, this is big. And then they all start like hearing the sound and they all kind of start goofing off. You're like, oh, it's like a real band, you know?
Yep.
And same thing with Almost Famous. It's like they let scenes be a little longer.
So good.
So there's so many more jokes in there. Like all the Philip Seymour Hoffman stuff is a little longer.
Philip crushes that. I read a thing. Philip, he was going to play the character different. But then that week he had this 110 temperature and they couldn't change the shooting schedule because he was shooting something else. So he shot that completely ill. And that's why he's all burned out. I'm like, I don't know, you know.
Oh, that's so perfect.
Yeah, right. I never even knew that, man. But Philip is a genius in that. And then Marin, who I didn't even realize.
Locked the gates.
Locked the gates. Yeah, is Marin. And later on, there I am meeting Marin. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and even Nick Swartzen has his thing where he's like the Bowie guy. He's waiting in the Riot House for Bowie.
Yeah. And then Mark from Red House Painters was my friend. He plays bass in the band.
Mark Kosolek was the bass player?
He's the bass player in the band, man. That's a fucking incredible.
He makes the saddest music ever now.
Yeah, and the reason he's in is because Cameron Crowe loved Red House Painters.
Really?
He's like, I got a part for you. I remember Mark's like, I'm doing this movie, man. Cameron Crowe, Almost Famous. Like, get out of here. You ain't doing no movie. Nah. You know what I mean? And fuck, he sure enough did. And it's that film.
Among the Leaves might be the best thing he's ever put out.
Oh, great.
I love Among the Leaves. The new one is really great, too.
Oh, Marin loves the new one. You see his tweets. My God, I love this.
Well, it's the saddest. It's like, who knew that
Yeah.
Sunko Moo could get sadder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's funny. San Fran has some of the best like singer songwriter guys, you
know? Dude, but like,
you got Chuck Prophet. A lot of people don't know. You know, Linda Perry was an incredible songwriter.
Now she writes songs for everybody now.
Yeah, and then you know, even early stuff like all the stuff out of the 70s. Yeah. There, you know, are you a Dead guy?
Never got into the Dead.
Yeah, will though at one point.
That's what I kind of like. There was a song playing on satellite radio, and I was like, fuck, this is good. This
it's catchy.
Because you get like, you know, because like when I came up, they were a parody of themselves.
Yeah, and you're a punk rocker. The ultimate evil is Grateful Dead.
Yeah, I remember I loved like Built to Spill, and then I saw them live and they jammed all their songs out to like, you know, 8 minutes. I was like, fuck this band. And I've been listening to them for years because of that.
Hilarious.
Yeah. So I just want to make sure my my wife, I was looking to meet.
You got to go. I'll let you go anyway. Fantastic conversation.
But I want to, this is so fun. We got to do, you know, we'll continue the conversation on Jonah Radio.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. I love what you're doing.
Oh,
and
as I'm you're complimenting me, I'm like,
I'm just saying,
thanks, man.
I really like, like I said, man, I'm more than an 80s rocker. You know
I know, but we both pick on each other.
It's hilarious. Yeah. But I love the scene down there. And
thanks.
If anybody comes to LA, go see it. It's Wednesdays at 8:00.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, Camille, I over the weekend was on the road lonely and power watched
Silicon Valley.
Fuck.
God, what a fucking great show. Huh?
Let me tell you. I can't fucking believe how good it is.
It's so fucking good.
It's so good. And Camille crushes. And TJ Miller, who I've always loved, who's like one of my favorite people on the planet.
The perfect role, the most perfect role he's ever played.
The guy is just murdering. And whoever the guy is that's the head of the company.
Oh, you know, he died, right? You know the whole story? Yeah.
The computer head?
The guy.
Yeah, that like guy died?
Yeah, he died in the middle of the season. Oh. He had cancer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
no.
there's some Mike Judge did a like, kind of an article talking about it.
How did that, he had can what kind of cancer?
I can't remember. He had cancer, then it like he got rid of it, and then they start production, and it came back, and he just didn't tell anybody.
Oh,
and then I think he ended up having a heart attack related to the cancer, and his body wasn't weak. Wasn't
what was
strong
that
enough.
Guy in before?
Check him out. He's been in a bunch of like he's just a character actor guy. Yeah, that's the saddest part is that he was blowing everybody out of the water.
Unbelievable, the Burger King stuff. Dude, have you seen
Sesame
the King?
Seeds?
Yeah.
Like all that, like
wow.
Okay, like it's so good,
dude. I'm a comedian. I work 7 nights a week. I'm always working, and so I never get to really watch stuff unless I'm out on the road. And I go, all right, I'm going to commit and watch this.
Yeah.
So I, because I love TJ, you know, and I always have.
Yeah.
So I go, I got to see this, and I can't fucking recommend it enough.
What a fucking dream team
and Camille
of a cast that is.
Crushes
too.
On it. He's so great. That one where the. He lies and says the chick wants to fuck him.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give away any of the stuff, people, but if you haven't seen
this. Oh, no, I was fucking lying, man.
Yeah, man, I was like, huh.
Yeah. That's the thing, Martin Starr. And then what's the guy that plays the really needy, like.
Big Head was in. Big Head was Marin's assistant.
But then, like, the guy that moves from, you know, Hooli over to Pied Piper.
Oh,
and, like,
I love
he's
him.
Like, he's like, oh, I'm sorry. Sometimes my appearance frightens people. I've been told I look like a sick ghost or something like that.
Was there Jello shots?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, it's like anyone who's a fan of Mike Judge is like
this fucking show is fantastic.
Dude, he's fucking like it's just like if you really think about Mike Judge, like he let's forget about Extract, but like he's. Pretty much like King of the Hill, one of the best TV shows of all time.
Unbelievable.
I think. Yeah.
Which recently I didn't even know that Pamela Alden was Bobby, and I love her.
My sugar bear.
I love her times 10.
Yeah, she's amazing.
I think she's one of the fucking.
She was also Gosling Duck and Darkwing Duck.
She's just crushing in Louie. She was amazing in Lucky Louie.
Yeah.
You
Lucky
know?
Louie. Yeah.
Oh.
Look at my butthole.
King of the Hill is fucking fantastic.
It's a fantastic show.
It's so dirty and dark and badass.
It's so good. It's
well,
so
shit.
Good.
Okay.
We'll keep on talking.
Yeah, and then your Twitter?
Oh, Jonah Ray. And then I have my podcast. If you're in a band, which I'm sure a lot of people are in bands.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I have a music podcast called Jonah Radio. If you think I'll like your band, email Jonah Radio, RAYDIO, at gmail.com. And we kind of, you know, try to get through all the songs, and we play the ones we like. And a lot of bands have actually said, hey, we saw some sales go up, or people showed up to our show saying they heard us on your podcast. Yeah. So it's, you know, doing, trying to do the good work.
That's
you
know, dope,
support
right?
Support other people.
You like also, you like Rival Sons?
You know what? Yousef was trying to tell me about them. I still need to go and let sink in.
How about St. Paul and the Broken Bones?
Another one. I've been so into, like, the thing is I've been like leaning way back into like kind of garagey pop punk stuff.
That's
but
great.
But also I want to say you, it's like I fucking like when I heard like kind of like the about you.
Yeah.
Like it was like, oh, this guy, he was in music for a long time. Then he made a decision. He wanted to like get into comedy. And then like the fact that you're just going and doing like you're like the fucking Gladwell thousand, you know, 10,000 hours. Like you're just.
I'm at 2574 spots. 2574 next month. 5-year anniversary.
Dude, that's incredible. That's more.
And I'm on Oddball this weekend.
No fucking way.
Yeah. So there you go, man.
It works. See, put in the work.
Put in the work. Yeah. Dude, yeah. Right.
Awesome. Thank well, I'm going to meet my wife for some
food. Hell yeah, man. Yeah. I love it. There he is. Jonah Ray. Thanks for tuning in, guys.